Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth, a sports scales of truth for you. The upside and the significant downside of NIL with the lens specifically on results at the NCAA tourney and just generally more focused on basketball. So, for instance, the headline of despite high price tag, UK roster, Kentucky roster already out. Similarly, University of Kansas roster, their team already out. So it's funny to me how people will revise history and say, this will democratize sports. No, it won't. At most, it just changes the who's who. The Big Ten, which was shit at actually delivering championships for all of their greed to grab teams from all over the place, despite it being logically, absolutely, pathetically awful to grab teams from the West Coast to the East Coast, and so many teams you can't even compete with each other but once every three fucking years. Otherwise, they were shit at delivering results. Now they're not as shit at delivering results. Now especially that there have been more indoor facilities. 25, 30 years ago, you didn't have indoor facilities. And that they've grabbed so many different areas of the country. There are richer recruiting grounds in the Big Ten. But they were not that great at delivering results before, and now they are. And that's some NIL stuff, like go poach, right? So again, that goes to, yeah, your powers change, but that doesn't mean that it democratizes the sports results. By far the opposite. So now you see, without any recognition of how this totally contradicts what they used to say, you'll see commentators say, well, you know, the good thing about that team is they're a rare team that has actually been able to hold on to their roster over the significant period of years. So they have experience with their system. But that's rare. That's the point. That's the rarity. Oh, it's a strength to hold on to your roster? Who knew? So what's really happening then is that the powers that be will shift, have shifted, and you can potentially get into the powers that be out of the blue, I suppose, if you call that democratization. But there's still going to be just the powers based on the money, based on the NIL, right? So Indiana, I know, is a little bit different, but I think they put significant NIL into things as well. So the positives, upward mobility of a particular player, right? I mean, you literally can go to, as I heard somebody say the other day, like you're doing small market broadcasting and then medium market and you move to the big market if that's where you want to be. The difference is, of course, that the mobility's better in this regard. In small market versus big market, you don't make 10 times as much. You may make twice as much, maybe even three, but not 10, not 100. Right? But you can go from junior college to Division II to lower level Division I to mid-major to a major program, or, you know, four of those steps, three of those steps, and make literally 10 to 100 times what you did to begin with. So the upside is that upward mobility, and obviously the earning the money that you should not make for playing 25 to 30 games in a year compared to what all other humans make. It's not fair, but I guess if you're tall enough and fast enough, if that's the goal of our, quote, universities, fine, whatever. I'm also going to bring in another aspect of NIL, which I find to be unfair and really stupid developmentally as far as player development. So I'll bring in that too. But the downside, as I said, besides it's just all you've done is shift the powers, unless all of a sudden you still need a little bit of a coach, but you just decide you have a billionaire benefactor and you're going to increase your NIL by 10 times, but that's just might makes right, right? But over a period of time, assuming that those powers that be have settled, all you've done is solidify those powers that be. The Cinderellas are less likely to occur. Now, there's positives and negatives as far as those potential factors how Cinderella might occur, but when you have a lower level Ball State or something, and let's say Ball State is really good at developing their players. The classic 1990s Duke, you got Grant Hill and Christian Laettner and other dudes who've been there for 3 of the 4 years. They are the definition of the culture. They bring the system along too. They are the institutional knowledge of the system, all right? You would have that at places that grow culture and keep people over the course of years. Well, now you can have those people, but they're not the talented people. They're not the most talented people. If you both grow culture and here and there you find a nugget in recruitment, that guy's gone. Which is two things. You've lost the ability to get the reward of finding those golden nuggets in recruitment. And you have lost the ability to, at least at the top of your roster, the most talented, the most productive, for those people to be the anchors, the flag bearers of your systematic knowledge, right? So if before a guy named Ben Smith was your guard that looked pretty good, like this guy's got a chance over the next 3 to 4 years, given that, you know, maybe he gets the 5th year or graduate or a red shirt or whatever, you go, man, this guy's continued to develop. He knows our system more and more. Our offense is something he knows, something he works. He's going to be really good by the time he's a senior, right? So you lose that because that guy then is in a different program. And now you have to reload every year with less resources for your NIL than the average person, than the average team, if you're like a Ball State or something like that. When you do develop somebody, he's gone, right? He's gone. And you can say, well, I guess you should have more money. But I'm telling you that goes into this whole powers that be. It's just a matter of the powers that be no longer being just about the rich recruiting grounds like the SEC, where there's plenty of population and plenty of passionate football fan base, Friday Night Lights and everything, where it's not just that you can recruit stars, you can fill out the entire roster with a more talented roster. That's harder in the middle of the Big 12, where there's lower population, you don't have as many 5A, 6A, 7A schools, and so that competition level's not there. When you're filling out the 7th most important roster spot, you just don't have the talent that you do in the middle of the SEC. Well, what's been replaced by that is your NIL. Can you afford to transport those people from their native schools, from their regions? Where you go, yeah, well, I mean, we used a lot of our NIL on these 6 or 7 positions of the 11, but what fills out with minimal NIL are just the guys that are in our recruiting grounds. You can now afford to pull some of those people over to your area in the NIL era. And so it really, again, just becomes a matter of who can you afford to pull away, which is really just might makes right. And the other issue is that besides just the fact, or rather we'll go into it more, it really is a thing that this institutional knowledge of those guys that have been there 2 to 3 to 4 years and have developed and have had looked promising, them staying there is not just about them, developing further into the system. It's about whether or not you can even use your system. Whether or not that, since you're having to turn over your roster so much from year to year, whether player development in the specific skills of your system goes out the window or tends to go out the window. And what I would say about this is this. You have a classic rest of the world versus USA team from the 90s and 2000s and earlier. Like, yeah, you guys practice a lot over in Europe together. Okay, your national team practices a lot. They know their maneuvering. They know their system. They know their ball movement. They know each other because they played with each other a lot. And classically, the USA team would, for the trying to qualify, we use some of our college guys or our lesser guys. Finally, the Olympics come around. Our first teamers are really, really available, but they have to come together quickly. Okay, so NIL is the parallel to that from year to year. And the parallel is the star-studded roster on the most NIL of NIL teams versus, I'm just changing date instead of location, versus like a Duke team from the 90s where all of your stars stayed there and developed more and more and more over a period of time. And they were pretty talented, but also very, very versed in their system. And can a team that gets pulled together from NIL from year to year, significant roster changes every single year, can they get pulled together enough such that they're, quote, all-star, because one of them was at Ball State last year, one of them was at a conference rival, another one was at another conference's medium power, and now you've got this all-star, but they don't know the system. There's no institutional knowledge and institutional player development for purposes of being able to run the system. Now they have to play a classic 1990s Duke team that has been 3-4 years together with some of their stars, and the players themselves help bring together the institutional knowledge. And who do you take? I really feel like at times, I've dissed KU in a recent episode, I would take the Duke team, because what happens is you are now just getting together some teams, some players that are individually have shown development and ability, but they're not on the same page systematically. So you're getting them to do what their talents are without necessarily having the time to say, but this is our system. This is how this rotation works. This is how we feed the post, and so on and so forth. The example, and I hate to go to what I know, but I'll just give it is what I know. KU in the last several years has been more like a, well, maybe if we just go into frenetic energy and defense, we might be able to catch up. It's a perfect example of, as I said, they were not going to survive the first weekend. But it almost seemed like they're going to versus a lower seed, St. John's, a 4-5. But the only way that they caught up was pure energy. It had nothing to do with the system or the design or an elegant offense or anything. And part of the reasoning is every year, what you didn't have to teach as much before because it became inherent knowledge, you had to teach the new kids, but not everybody, is just how does this system work? How do we make it better and better and better? And I think, for instance, the Purdue, is it the Purdue guard has been around for a while, and some other Big Ten guards have been kept longer. They're not just the brand new transfer. And so the institutional knowledge of how the system in its most elegant form, in its most pure form works, is not there at KU. And I'm not saying I don't question the system, but to the extent the system's a system, it's not there. And it's not even matching what the coaches hope to do, because you're bringing in different guys every year. And if you don't keep them, out it goes. The other thing is, as to player development, because you're just getting new people in all the time. If you don't get your system put in place, then you just end up having, for instance, I'll pick on KU again, no post moves, no post feeds, no good training, and that might be, for purposes of KU, a problem with, like, who coaches the bigs? Okay, whoever coaches the bigs, we have to be able to feel like we can feed the post to someone who's halfway skilled, as opposed to just someone who's frenetically trying to put up as much energy as possible. So some of that goes to, do you have a good big man, a good post coach? And if you don't, it's going to be a problem. However, when you have to teach things over and over again, because every year the roster is different, there's only so much room for, you know, teaching that thing again and again. When people are coming from different systems, does it go back to, are you simplifying your systems? It's another version of the way an NFL quarterback lasts, really, for years and years and years, is to learn how to throw, right? To learn how to be a quarterback that doesn't get hit. Now, you can come in and be a dynamic threat, a la Lamar Jackson and others. But the way you survive long term is to, what? To learn how to throw precisely, accurately, usually. Example, Patrick Mahomes looked like shit last year. I'm a Chiefs fan, but the point of the matter was the passing game sucked for a variety of reasons, including just a total lack of precision. Then Patrick Mahomes didn't believe in the passing. He would pull it down and not even throw, try to run, and of course he gets injured. So that's the microcosm example of a guy who usually can throw, but after 3 years of shit offense under Matt Nagy, could not throw any longer, did not trust his receivers' routes anymore, did not throw to them in stride when that's where he was perfect at. And the example, the analogy there is, it goes back to, if you don't learn that, then you don't do well long term. But what happens a lot, and it's going to be more so with NIL, is that the running quarterbacks work great in college. Because if you've got a very athletic running quarterback who can throw a little bit, a la the classic Vince Young, yeah, be an opportunistic thrower, you can really get defenses that are not at your level especially. You can absolutely, just punch through them. That's not the word I was looking for, but you can absolutely get them. But what happens in the pros as a result of that, we don't have as much time to teach this elegant offense. What's easier is just to have an athletic guy back there. He can throw a little bit. Fine, he can. It can be very effective. But some of that, what's got put into the NFL, is a result of that less precise offenses in college. And by the same token, some of these less precise offenses, these just can you dig down and try harder for 10 or 15 minutes because you're behind. I'll allow you the KU almost comeback, but still losing to a number 5 seed. And having no, I kept looking, are you going to feed the post? Are you going to feed the post? No, you're not. And so, again, this goes to even, basic teaching of an offense. If all we're doing is splitting out our, is substituting our lesser skilled players for new skilled players, and then we lose. And then we lose our most skilled players unless we're at the very, very, very top. Then it just goes to, it's harder to teach. And it goes to less teaching. Less overall results with teaching, because you're not learning a system in 3-4 years. You got to learn 3-4 systems. And within that team, they're just not as versed in the system. So they just have to go to like this street ball stuff. I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just mean as opposed to, 5-on-5 organized systematic ball. It goes to the same idea of, when you play too much, you don't give as much time to practice. Well, now your guys are different in practice. The whole AAU ball, versus Europe, and I'm going to get to that. But versus Europe, like, well, geez, you're not even practicing with the foundational previous 100 practices, because every year, whatever, 12, 15 guys in a roster, you go where you started as far as people who know this system has gone down to, 20% instead of up to 75%. So previously, and I know it didn't work exactly this way, but for easy math, you had to replace 25% of your roster. Right, there were transfers, but it wasn't a crazy amount. So that means 75% of people had previous practices, either a year or 2 year or 3 years worth of practices in this system, right? And of course, it's a little less than that because there were still regular transfers. But now that it's NIL and transfer, 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 you start a season and you've got 20% of your roster, 25% of your roster, only 30% of your roster that has even had previous practices, let alone how many of them have 3 years worth of practices in the system. I'm going to go on and touch the other thing that I want to touch on, and that's just the idea of. It's a different topic, but I do find it related because it's NIL related. This is a horrible, horrible trend. And some people are going to be like, that's racist. I mean, like, reverse racist? I don't give a shit. Just waving my hand in front of my face like a three-pointer. It doesn't even need to look. You think I care? Like, look. I don't even care. I'm waving my hand in front of my eyes. I don't care. You can have your hand in front of me. I'm still going to say what I'm going to say. This NIL and this era is awful as to American basketball player development. You can feel free to disagree. That's your right. But this is what I believe to be the case. The United States basketball is already behind. I mean, everybody says it now. The way that European basketball and other world basketball develops their players and gets them to be skilled as opposed to just big and athletic. Okay? Big and athletic is great, but you supplement that with skills. We all know that skills can make up for athleticism. And if you put them on top of athleticism, holy shit! So obviously skills are very important, just like size and strength and explosiveness are important. Skills are the equalizer, right? And we can all, for the most part, agree that, particularly when it comes to big men, but anybody, that right now we lag behind our European and other world counterparts as far as player development of skills. Okay, we all know this. This is old news. Hey, we never worried about our centers needing to do guard type stuff. Oh, why would we care? They're down there to be centers. And now we have closer to the positionless basketball. And we understand that overseas, everybody learns to dribble and they continue to try to learn to dribble, they continue to try to have a handle. And as we see more and more overseas players, getting and Canadian players getting the MVPs, even if American basketball overall is stronger, this comes to pass. It comes to roost. It's manifested, this difference in skill development. Well, we still have that problem. Like American basketball players still do AAU, which is more playing than practicing. Correct, 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 correct. And when you play, that's great. but it's not the same thing as dribble, 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 dribble. No, bro, you still can't. You seem to be limited at three dribbles, and then you freak out and you pass it. I mean, listen, that's me talking. I can't dribble. I would freak out too. I mean, you have to have composure and skill. You know, Steph Curry dribbling type stuff. I'm not to that level, but that's the type. The more comfortable you are, the sooner you can have a post presence and not freak out and just pass it right back out from the post. You know, you can do the Hakeem Olajuwon check, 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 left, left, over that shoulder, pivot back right, fake back again left, and then pivot back right again and put it up. You know, you got the ball for 6-7 seconds. The post feed down low is actually productive. Okay, that's skills-based. All right? Now, what's my tie-in here? The U.S. version of the better player development to get to the pros is what? It's college. It's not high school, right? It's not AAU. AAU is like, these guys are pretty darn good. They're devoted, and they can win in a game, but they can be a little pigeonholed as far as whether or not they have all the skills. Can they post? Because remember, good big guards can post, right? They can actually post another guard. And good bigs can dribble, right? So college is what helps prepare that. You see where I'm going? Remember, this is my deal about it not helping American development. Well, based on the very thing I already told you, the rest of this stuff is not helping player development in college. It's making it harder, all these transfers. Because again, you're like, oh, now you're in a new area, now just try hard. I'm not saying the best of the teams aren't good. I'm not saying you can't still teach the systems, but it is much more difficult when your roster turns over all the time. How many times do you have to go now over more the basics and the concepts when people are new and had a different system the year before and somebody else is only a year into it when you otherwise would have been 3 years into it? Right, would have been his fourth year. It's only his second year. Four of your important guys, it's their first year. But wait, what are we doing with our NIL? It's the same idea of why develop somebody when maybe we can roll the dice on somebody who's already developed. Classic example, going back to KU as an excuse. Well, what if we just pay for Hunter Dickerson? He's a Dickinson. Dickinson? Hunter Dickinson out of Michigan. Pardon me. Why don't we just pay for Hunter Dickinson? Then we don't have to develop a big man. He's already developed. Well, what are we doing also with our big men in particular? Think through the rosters. Think through the rosters of the teams in March Madness. What have we done? Our U.S. player development pipeline, which is colleges, as opposed to club teams in Europe and how they develop theirs, as opposed to AAU, which is nice for those people who are good in high school, but it's not particularly skills development. Our skills development pipeline in America is now full of people from Europe. And there are even, I can't remember what team, but I literally heard, you might know, but there's a guy who literally played professionally in Europe for 6 years. So he probably started at 15, but now he gets to come in as a transfer. What is the role of United States colleges? Most of them, I mean, they're related to the state, right? And so if the state's mission is to help educate their citizens, it's already once removed when they bring in people from the West Coast, if you're in the middle of the country, to play ball for them. But now you're bringing in guys from Europe and Australia, Africa, and so on, which for those individuals, you know what I always say? I can't hold it against you for taking an opportunity that the system's allowed. Just like an abortion in the total opposite direction, I'm not going to hold it against a woman to use an option that's available to them legally. I'm not going to hold that against them personally. They're in a tough situation. I can disagree with whether I like the option, right? As an adoptee, I'm kind of glad my mom didn't take the other option, even though she is in a tough place. Kind of glad about that, or I wouldn't be here. But I can't hold it against the people who took that option. By the same token, am I supposed to hold it against an Australian who goes, maybe I wouldn't mind? My Australian always gets mixed up with my European, my British accent, so I'm not going to try it. Maybe I wouldn't mind playing in the United States. That'd be cool. Be over there for a little while, then go from there. That's fine. They can take that option. Makes sense. A big guy from Ukraine can go, you know what? Maybe I could play in college in America. That seems kind of fun. I'd be over in the U.S. for a while, get a degree. That's pretty cool. That's fine. Yeah, they should take that option. But you do understand what this NIL, when we bring in a player from the Ukraine or England or Italy or Australia or any place in Africa, wherever it is, we are using our college NIL money and our college scholarships in American colleges to now make the American player development less effective. Because to the extent our player development is effective, it is now not being used for American players. And some of the rosters are ridiculous. Like, say you get that, oh, like trying to be creative. So let's say it's a mid team, you know, like always that team that finishes either towards the bottom third or the middle of their conference. And so they go, we don't have the resources of the big guys in our conference. We got to be creative. And they go, well, you know, let's be looking overseas, see if we can't pluck somebody out of a lack of notoriety and just see if they'd be interested in coming over. Let's try to find someone who's on a club team, but they're in college age, and just see if we can't woo them over. It's not one of the big five-star recruits, but we're a mid-team. That guy's got some size, and we can use some size. And he's somewhat developed. He's been playing in their club ball for 5 years. And that makes sense that they would do that. But you're having just giant amounts of overseas players. And, you know, call me a xenophobe. I didn't say which country I have a problem with them pulling from. I'm just saying that strategically, this idea as American basketball, USA basketball, your major pipeline for development over here is a little bit AAU, but again, too much competition, not enough skills development. So the skills development is the college pipeline. And not only are you butchering that by not having players stay in one development area, which is one program, but now you're diluting it by using our pipeline to develop other countries' players. And to a large extent, now what I would do, if you want to call the Japanese xenophobes, you can, but I believe it's still true, I don't know for sure, is just simply put a limit. Say there's nothing wrong with American colleges overwhelmingly trying to develop American players. And so you can't have any more than three of your roster spots in a given year, three entire roster spots that are players that are not, did not grow up, that are not currently American citizens. And probably you need to be more strict than that, because then they'd get around and go, just live here for 6 months and you can be a citizen. I mean, that wouldn't work, but American citizens, not American residents. There you go. If he's an American citizen and or had to play ball in America for at least 3 years, I would put a quota on it. I mean, Japan does it because they don't want American baseball players to dominate Japanese baseball. They want to develop Japanese players at a game that they love. And so if you want our pipeline, with all of its imperfections, but the best pipeline that we have to continue to support American players, then the answer is not to screw it up by taking, hey, those of you who don't want the development of your club-type system in Europe that's a lot more practice-based and skill-based, go ahead and take up a lot of the rosters in American basketball, too. That, now, some of you would say, competition's competition. If they can't handle it, they can't handle it. No. You can say that, right? Like, American players got to learn how to handle it. Yeah, but this is a subsidization type of a decision, right? This isn't just... This is a public money type of a situation. So rules can be made regarding that public money type of a situation. And therefore you have policies around it. And the policy around it are things like, this institution is meant to serve the state of Minnesota. Because it's meant to serve the state of Minnesota, it's meant to serve Minnesota citizens overwhelmingly. That is who we are trying to prepare for their careers. Therefore, overwhelmingly, and again, most programs violate this. So this is a different level, but I'm going to get to the other level. Most overwhelmingly, our programs should try to prepare Minnesotans for their future life and their future career. That includes the athletic programs. All right. And then after that, therefore, of course, while there should not be an overwhelming amount of people from other places that are being served that aren't from and are not likely to live here afterwards because the university is to try to make the state a better place, then if that's true, that we don't want to have too many people from places other than Minnesota, but in other states, it's certainly also true, but to a greater degree, that we don't want to be serving people not only from Minnesota, but not from the United States, particularly with scholarships. Hello? Hello? They can give their own gifted people or people who are worthy of scholarships those scholarships. We don't want to be using Minnesota money to be giving Kansas kids scholarships. A, if we do, we want to minimize or limit that. And then B, we certainly then don't want to go, not even from the Midwest, how about somebody from Toronto uses? No, that's not the mission. See, there's a policy involved. This isn't pickup ball. And just put your money in the can, and whoever wins gets the whole can. It's policy based. It's things that we are trying to do with our mission. So yeah, I'm just telling you, whether you agree or not, NIL is one thing, but I think it's accelerated. Now we can just pay to get these guys in more than a scholarship. Like, you could have maybe, you know, persuaded someone from Lithuania to come over just to get a free ride. But now you're trying to persuade him with a free ride plus $100,000 a year. I think you can probably get him. And so I don't know what the study is, but in my opinion, it's overwhelming. And I've been wrong before as far as the number of starters that are not American starters in college basketball. Again, call me a xenophobe if you want, but I'm talking about, are we trying to develop American players with American college scholarships? Because you'd think that would be the mission. And now we are doing less and less so. Okay, guys. Yeah, a little bit of overview and thoughts on NIL and the state of American college sports. Well, if your bracket's gone, well, I have no idea. I filled out one just for shits and giggles. But I do not have an office bracket, unfortunately. People are not participating in an office bracket. It's so 2026, bro, that we don't have anybody participating in an office bracket because I may or may not work in a situation where, office is not right around me. All right, guys, thanks for listening to Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley.